Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Get a Job. I'm your host, Kathleen Brady, and I am a career life management coach with 25 years of experience helping people identify and achieve their work-life goals. The purpose of our show, as those of you who have listened before know, is to provide job seekers with best practices, share some information and ideas with you about how to go about landing that job of your dreams. And once you know what the best practices are, we try to help you adapt them to your personal circumstances. Doesn't matter what stage of your career you're at, whether you're looking for your first job, a mid-career change, or even your second or third act in life, we are certainly here to share that information and take your calls to answer your specific questions. This is a show that you may want to actually call in on tonight. We've got a great guest. Our number to call in is 646-716-9397, and we will do our best to get to everyone. For additional support around your job search, in addition to past archives of the show, don't forget to check out my website at careerplanners.net and, of course, my Facebook page at KB Career Planners. I'm extremely excited about tonight's show and our guest in particular, who is a good friend and colleague. We have with us tonight Gail Parker, who is the principal of GP Interaction. And Gail is a communications guru, I like to call her. She has trained thousands of professionals on how to maximize their presence, build their brand, put it out there in the world, and communicate with impact. And she's done this in a variety of settings. So she has certainly helped companies communicate in crisis management. She's helped prepare people for media events for themselves, helps people prepare their messages for businesses, and certainly for interviewing. And one of the reasons she and I have teamed up and do so well when we're working with folks on interview skills is one of the area of expertise that I bring to the party is on the tactical part of it. That's why we have spent so much of our time in earlier shows talking about the self-assessment and knowing what your goals are, what your skills and talents are, your attributes, what it is that you have to sell an employer. And I can help you identify those things, and those are the way, you know, that's the meat of it. You have to know what it is you want to say. And then we bring Gail in with her creative side, who helps you, once you know what it is you need to say, helps you figure out how to say it in a powerful way so that you're the one that stands out in the interviewer's mind. So this is all about, our show tonight is all about the implementation. It's about figuring out how you translate your wants and needs into benefits for the employers and how to create that dynamic message. So, Gail, welcome to the show. We're so excited that you're here with us tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. Equally excited to be on the line with you and your listeners. Thanks.
So you've got so much experience helping people craft messages, as I said, from everything from ranging from media appearances to presentations to job interviews. So in your mind, what is the overall strategy for an effective interview?
Right. Getting right specific to the message and then answering the overview question, the message itself you hear in many forms. It can be, some people call it a topper, which is your opening. It can be an elevator pitch. It can be your interview. It can be, if you're at a barbecue, how do you talk to your friends and get business? And there's a core that can be consistent for each job, and that is job specific. So there's a core of who you are and what you want to lead with. And like you said in the introduction, what makes you special? So that gets fit into an overall plan, of course, no surprise to anybody, preparation, and then during the interview, and then your follow-up. And all of those not only have the strategy that, Kathleen, you're so great at, it also has a personality. There has to be an air of confidence both in the delivery and the preparation and the follow-up in your letter, in everything, and also enthusiasm in all of the above.
It's so fabulous, and you sort of have very succinctly articulated what I have taken. It's taken me 9 shows to tell them. But it really is the core. That's why you're so good at messaging. You have to have the core of who you are, and that's got to be true and authentic. So when we talk about creating your elevator pitch and all those sort of trendy phrases that we hear out there, at the end of the day, it really boils down to what's the core of who you are, and you have to know that in order to be able to create this message.
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the quotes that I have liked over the years is to say, when an interviewer says, or when an interviewer asks you about yourself, they better be darn sure they're glad they asked. So it comes down to that. So that's your job. Ultimately, that's your job. The wow factor, yeah.
Well, let's talk about this and get into the weeds a little bit with people.
Sure.
So
good.
You sort of know the core of who you are. How do you talk about that without sounding boastful or obnoxious or me, 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 me?
Right, right. Well, you know, what springs to mind is a little bit, to answer your question directly, it's a little bit of where you're from, because I'm from the Midwest, and so if I express something, it can come across as self-effacing as opposed to confident. And if someone who is really a Northeasterner, and people have accused this is, of course, a generalization, can come across as arrogant. And it's really, who are you talking to? It always comes down in anything you do to who's your audience. So you want to understand, in some situations it would be, I led a team that was very successful, would be terrific. And in other times you want to say, I was successful as the team leader. I mean, it's how assertive do you want to be? And that takes reading the interview. It takes reading the interviewer. It takes reading the breakdown and seeing how much of a driver they want. And then be yourself, and be yourself to the extent that it matches. One of the exercises that I think is really good is, after somebody would do all of your work, the assessments and who am I, know thyself, that whole Aristotle thing, mm-hmm. put those down side by side. Just put those as bullet points in any order. Then look at the breakdown for the job that you want. Put those down side by side and see which match. It's like a Venn, you know, it's like a Venn chart. Which overlap? And the ones that overlap, that's going to be your strength. Those are the things you already know you have to offer. It's just a matter of articulating it with confidence and enthusiasm.
And I love that, because that is a very specific strategy, because what people may have heard is, well, be yourself but play to your audience. And I think I get what that means, and I know you do, but some people miss that, and they go, well, I can't do both of those things. Well, we're not asking you to do both of those things, but we're asking you to take the best of who you are and deliver it in a way that they can hear it.
Absolutely.
Is what you're saying. So it's not about not being who you are.
Right. No, it can't be. It can't be, because you might get through an interview, but it's going to be miserable for either you and or the employer once you start working. So it doesn't really accomplish anything. If you see a job that is absolutely wrong for you, and you have to do it financially, there needs to be a positive way, as you quoted before from Lean In and other sources. There's got to be something about that job that does connect with you, so that you want to go there, some kind of a learning, some kind of a possibility. Yet to show up every day with absolutely no passion or purpose is just too hard. So I know the realistic, you know, you have to put food on the table. There has to be something in that job description that's more than that, or you create it for yourself.
Well, I love this notion of sort of taking your own self-assessment and, you know, these are my skills and talents, and here's the job description, and here's what they need, and sort of matching them up and seeing.
Yep.
So now we know what are the things I need to deliver, and how do I need to say those things? And how do you craft, what's the next step in the process?
So the next step would be what they call a topper, and it has something to do with your message. When you look at what an employer is looking for, what they want, the secret of life is to find out what somebody else wants and then give them as close as you can in terms of the needs. You find out what they want. Look at their job description. I think you said in one of your terrific letters, blogs, Kathleen, that they put out the 100% ideal. Nobody really believes they're going to find that. So if you're not 100%, what'd you say? What was the percentage you used?
If you're 60%.
Yeah.
You know, if you, yeah.
So there
you go. You've got six out of the 10 bullets. Yeah.
Yeah. So find your 60% and say, okay, now I will direct. There are many parts of me that I could talk about. I want to talk about the part of me that they care about. What can you do for me? The first question, do you want to start? Tell me about yourself. Do you have any questions? It's always the same. What can you do for me? That's what they're really asking. So you need to know that ahead of time by knowing the industry, as specific as you can, the industry, the specific company, some of the strategies that you always promote using LinkedIn, anything you can find out so that you say, ah, that's the thing that is true about me that I want to lead with. So if it says that they are absolutely strongly looking for a team player and you are a specialist and you like to work alone, you think about that and you say, gee, I'm going to open this by saying one of my strengths is to go to a brainstorming session, anticipating some needs with some strategies that may or may not be needed, and then I can take the ball and run with it. I want that ball. After you brainstorm, let me go with it. I love to spring into action after being in a team meeting. That's still a team player. It's just on your terms. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense, and I think it's such a valuable way to look at it. So rather than say, well, I'm not really a team player because I like to work alone, of course you're a team player, but perhaps it looks a little bit different on you than it might look on someone else. So
right.
Rather than say, I don't have it, you're finding the way that you are the team player.
It's the spin, and it's true. Most specialists do love to work alone after they've gotten an idea from the creative team. So it is true. And I think in most situations where you see the bullets that are presented by the employer, you can say, I do that in this way. And that, of course, is some of the strategy work that you do. Then it's easier for my piece because you can go in and talk about it with enthusiasm because you're not covering up. You're actually expounding.
I think that that is so fabulous for people to really think about that. And what, the other piece that I like, and I'm not sure if people are catching it, is it isn't about the credentials as much as it is about what you can do. And I know a lot of folks I work with kind of get stuck there. Well, they say they really, you know, prefer somebody with a master's degree, or they really want someone who's got, you know, went to this school or that school. And I think you sort of know that that may be their preconceived notion, but when you can say, here's what I can do, and here's
right.
how my background will help you, and is actually, you never want to say better than somebody else's, but you say, here's how my background, although perhaps it looks different to you than what you think you're looking for, this is how it's really helpful to you.
Sure.
And really put that spin on it for folks.
Absolutely. And when I say that the three steps are prep, during the interview and follow-up, that's also true for the interviewer. They have the same three steps. So their preparation is weeding out the resume. And when they say, come on in, if you don't have the master's, they obviously don't care as much about it as you do. You're in that room for a reason. Your resume, assuming it is telling the truth, does not have the master's on it, as to use your example. So you can go in there with full confidence that your skills are what they are looking for. There are three parts to the presentation piece. One is your skill. Do you have the skills? That's your resume. That's basically your resume. Two, do you have the enthusiasm during the interview to show them that you want the job, you're going to stay, you'll be enthusiastic when you're there, you're going to be positive, you're going to have a positive effect on people. And then the last is this X factor with some of the illegal stuff that you're talking about, or somebody else has a PhD, so they're looking at that. You can't know. Forget that. As they say in sports, turn your back to that net. There's nothing you can do about that piece. Your job in that interview is to be enthusiastic. In fact, the quote at that point is, it's less about the content of your answer than the way you convey knowledge through your confidence and enthusiasm.
And
there are skills
always
to do that. Yeah.
So in the presentation, it's all about sex.
That's
skill,
right.
Skill, enthusiasm, the X factor.
I knew you'd catch that. Skills, enthusiasm, the X factor. I knew I could count on you. Because if you're good at those three things, then the rest, everybody can fill in the blank. You'll
That's
get your call back.
Perfect. That's perfect. And I do love the fact, I do think oftentimes when people are in the interview, that's, they're so afraid of that one thing that they don't have, and they're really focused on the what I don't have, and they're almost explaining it away, and no one's ever even asked the question, because as you say, you're already in the room, so you've passed that first threshold of you've got the basic minimum skills that they need.
Yep.
Now it's
yep.
all about the enthusiasm and the other things that, that you can sell us.
Absolutely. So during the interview, if you want to get to some of the nitty-gritty of body language and eye focus and the exact messaging, we can go there, assuming you're walking in the room just with your mindset saying, they want me, they would not be wasting my time. You've got to walk in with a positive mindset because your thoughts are your feelings are your behaviors. So if you walk in with doubt, your behaviors are going to show doubt. So step number one is, talk to yourself right outside that door. Take a breath and say, I am the answer. I'm the answer to what they're looking for. They want you to be an answer. No one likes a job hunt on either side. I Kathleen, you know this from my background as an actor. When we would go into audition in front of a casting director, from the time you walk in the room, before you say hello, you are in the ballpark or you're out of it. And you're out of the ballpark if you walk in with the wrong tempo, the wrong suggestion of clothes. You walk in with the essence of knowing that you are the answer to the problem. I need to cast this role. It's the same thing.
And that gets to the whole image and what you wear and how you carry yourself. As you say, you kind of have to look like you're from Central Casting, and you have to know who your audience is.
Right. And some of the studying may be networking or LinkedIn or saying, if I wear my designer suit, am I going to look like I'm trying too hard? You might be. The designer suit is not right for every interview. It's right for most of them in corporate, but not all of them.
And that's the thing I think people sometimes forget, and it is, I remember, you know, working a lot with lawyers, people who were trying to get from the big law firm world into the public service world, and the public service people got a little snooty and say, you know, and here they are walking in with their $600 suit, and, you know, who do they think they are? And from the other person's point of view, they're thinking, I'm just putting on my best suit. Like, I'm trying to impress you. So, but didn't realize the negative impact that that might have. So you got to play for the job or the role that you want.
Exactly.
And so you have to do a little. That's why when we talk about not just the self-assessment, but we also spend a lot of time with folks talking about the market assessment. You have to know what the values of the organization are that you're joining and make sure you look that part.
Mm-hmm. It's all in the homework.
It's interesting. I mean, I think sort of clothes and makeup aside, I mean, because that I think you do play to your audience. There are still some universal truths, no matter what kind of job you're applying for, what you say in terms of body language.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, let's talk about some of those.
When you walk in the door, the first second is really important, and I'm talking about the handshake. And the handshake is, I know this sounds basic, it is V to V with a certain amount of strength. Now, check it with your friends. Shake hands with your friends and make sure it's not too soft or too, you know, hand crushing.
Crushing.
Because that V to V is significant. If you miss, if you have a weak handshake, you can't do the job. Or you're distrustful. It's the handshake is V to V for a reason, and the hands are parallel. Don't take your hand on top of theirs. That's a power play. Don't take it under. It's subservient. It's equal, the handshake, for a reason. Critical is that you look people in the eye. The number one skill in rapport and engagement, number one, is eye focus. If you look down, if you look at the clock, if you say, oh, gee, what a beautiful picture of your family while you're shaking hands, you have dismissed the other individual. You are only partially engaged with the other individual, and that's not a good message.
You have to be the alpha dog. Show no fear.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And of course, it's a look that is not confrontational at all, and at the same time shows the power of the alpha dog, the confidence, yeah.
I just want to emphasize the point, because it took me a second when you were talking V to V with the handshake. You're talking about that part in your hand.
Index finger and thumb. I'm sorry. Thank you.
that's yeah. I just wanted to clarify that, because that was one of the things I know when I first entered the business world, I got the criticism of don't shake hands like a girl, because what I would do is put my thumb over the side, and your thumb really needs to go straight ahead so that it is that V2V lock.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the business handshake.
Yeah.
All over the world. There are arguments about iFocus, but it's very, very specific to business is iFocus being universal. Other than that, obviously, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So then there's a secret when you shake hands. I know this all sounds crazy, but what you are doing from the first second is building rapport. This is someone I want to work with, or someone I'm not sure about, or someone I don't want to work with. And that's that first 10 seconds. And then everything else is, was I right or wrong about my first impression? So why dig yourself out of a hole? So instead of thinking to yourself, oh, I'm meeting this new person, nice to meet you, you feel the tension and the fear and the uncertainty in that. That's just scary stuff. If you think to yourself, it's nice to meet you again. Now, don't say it. You'll sound like a crazy person. But if you think to yourself, it's nice to meet you again, your demeanor changes and it's warmer and more relaxed. So it's a thought that changes your behavior.
And that's it. You have to talk to yourself silently.
Yep, silently, please. Please don't say it again if you've never met them before.
Right.
Yeah, don't do that.
It's funny how that subtle shift, though, truly can change your mindset.
Completely.
You know, and I think people, you know, it kind of gets your focus off your nerves.
Yep.
And that's what you're trying to do. It's great.
Exactly.
Sorry,
the focus is on the rapport. No, not at all. It's absolutely on the money. So then you want to sit down, and you do want to sit down in such a way that you are, again, the alpha dog, that you have posture that is solid but relaxed, not tense, and keeping your hands apart is key, not easy, but absolutely key, because if you put your hands together, there are two negatives. One is you're going to play. You're going to pick or twist or ring and be in a distraction and look nervous. And if you are nervous, it's going to come out that way. As a self-soother, they call it, someone put something in the hands. The other is that if you block your center, you are saying, I am protecting myself from you or against you. It's all about, can you be hurt? It's all about weapons. You want to look transparent, saying, I am not afraid. I am here to answer all questions, to tell you who I am in the best possible light, and you've got to be open. You've got to be open to the daggers, as Shakespeare would say, of the slings and arrows of the words. Be open, be open. So when you sit there, you don't want to cross your legs. You want to be open. You sit with your feet on the floor or 1 foot ahead, and you just have the air of positive, confident without being rigid. I know it's easier to show than tell. Is there something I can...
Right.
Yeah, is there a better way to say that?
No, I think that's... I think you've said that well. I think one of the keys that... And I learned this from Gail, so this is not my idea, but when you're sitting... no matter what kind of chair, whether it is one of those big, you know, you sink into the chair, like it's some places have those big comfy chairs, you know, just kind of slink in. Most interviews are going to happen in some kind of a business chair. But I learned you sit on two-thirds of the chair, because if you don't let your back go all the way to the back, it sort of forces you to sit up straight. So you're not, you know, your shoulders don't round, because there's something about once those shoulders round, I remember you saying, Gail, your IQ drops 10 points.
Yeah,
that's just how you look.
I was told by a physical therapist. Yeah, that's Delta Dog, a C-curve of Delta Dog.
If with your feet flat, almost as if you were standing with your feet flat on the floor and sitting on the front two-thirds of the chair, now you're sitting up straight and your hands are just on your lap. Resist the Catholic schoolgirl to fold your hands, look like you're in prayer. That doesn't bode well. But if your hands are apart, then you'll just use them rather naturally. You'll be naturally animated, even if you are not somebody who talks a whole lot with your hands. You just look more natural when you do that.
Absolutely.
So just try it out at home before you go and see what
Absolutely.
It feels like.
And if you do not gesture naturally, I'm going to say that statistically, 9 out of 10 people are visual in their learning curve as opposed to auditory or kinesthetic. Most people are visual. Unless you give them a visual, they cannot hear you. At least they have to work too hard to hear you, so they lose interest. If you simply gesture somewhere between your chin and, say, the chest area, so that you don't block your face, it's easier for people to see that gesture than if it's in your lap, and certainly if they're at a desk where they can't see it at all, and certainly your hands must be above the table if you're sitting at a table, apart on the table, forearms on the table, because you want to lift that off. A talking head is 20% retention. You want to get to the minimum of 70%, which is what a good gesture will do, so that you're memorable. You look relaxed. You're playing the odds of saying and being remembered, of speaking and being remembered. And the tests on this by social behavioralists, blind children from birth talk with gestures. To your point, it is not natural not to gesture. So if you don't like to gesture, do a little bit of it anyway, because the odds are the person across from you is going to feel far more comfortable if you do.
And it's interesting. It's not. I think people sometimes think it's a bad thing because people say, "Oh, I talk too much with my hands." It's not unless your arms are flailing around uncontrollably, which typically they're not. Even if people say they talk with their hands, it makes you more animated. It makes you come alive, and it shows people your energy. You want to have a certain amount of energy when you're in an interview.
Absolutely, so. they are looking for the appropriate enthusiasm. If you're going in for sales, your energy will probably be higher than if you're going in to be an auditor. That's your thought. Your thought is, what's your word? I want to be inspiring. I want to motivate. I want to convince. I want to update. Your word. You will not gesture too much if your word is, I want to convince. If you want to inspire, that's sales. So
right.
you need your word. Words have energy, and they affect your behavior. So get your word. And I've worked with hundreds of people on this. I said, I can tell you right now, you don't have the right word in your head. And they never do, because their behavior is not appropriate.
Get the right word in your head.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
But before we move on to that, because I'm writing that down because I want to make sure I ask you about that, it's staying on body language. So we're talking about your own as the interviewee, but talk to us a little bit about what they should be looking for in the interviewer. How do we read their body language?
Sure. And it is tricky because one piece of body language does not a sentence make. You've got to read a series of things. So if somebody is sitting there leaning way back, what they're doing is saying, I'm more important than you are. You have to come to me. Well, that may be unconscious. It's also true. They've got the hiring power. So that just may be a power position that they're taking because their thought, which is affecting their behavior, is I'm the power here. And that's how they'll sit. So it isn't necessarily anything about you. If they sit there and they cross their arms, it may be that they're not happy with what you're saying. It may be that they disagree or don't like you. It is just as likely that they don't want to reveal that they're so excited about seeing you. They are hiding something, but what they're hiding is not your job. Your job is to stay and think, well, their body language, if they go from closed arms to open arms, that's a great sign. If they go from back to forward, that's a great sign. If they're talking forward and they go way back, you may think to yourself, that's an area I want to be cautious there. They've moved away from me. But that's pretty sophisticated, and the danger is you're not really listening if you're thinking about, what their body language is doing. So be aware of it. Be aware of their body language. If it's too much of a focus, that's why I don't like, mirroring. If it's too much of a focus, you stop listening. And that's not good.
Right. It's interesting. One of the things I always say to folks in interviewing and watching the interviewer, it's the eye contact is so important, A, because it gives you the connection, but it allows you to get a visual message back. So if you're giving an answer and you see a shift, you can feel it. I mean, you can just see it in front of you, so you know either I'm going on too long with this answer or I'm off point, or there's some confusion that I want to stop and clarify with them. But you get that visual cue back, so that you just want to be paying attention to that stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely true. And body language, and you and I both do the same thing. If anybody has a video camera, don't be afraid to work with it. You learn so much because you're seeing yourself as the interviewer will see you. And it's really the only way that you're going to know whether you look like you're nervous or if you look like you're arrogant. That be the outside eye if you can.
And I have to tell you, people are so reticent about getting themselves, oh, I hate to see myself on video, and they won't do it. There's such power. And the power isn't necessarily, and I've done this a couple of times with folks, where they would come in, they would tell me how awful the interviewer, their interviews went, and they're terrible, whatever. And when they were looking at themselves objectively, they realized they weren't so bad. You know, like all those things that they thought were these huge, when they sort of stepped outside themselves, they could really see what they were doing really well. So, you know, don't worry about, oh, you know, I'll need a haircut or I look 10 pounds heavier or whatever it might be. Just really, what can you learn from it so that you can, when you're in the moment, do better? So encourage doing the video thing. Let me just give our number again in case anybody's got any questions they want to call. The number to call in is 646-716-9397. We're here tonight with Gail Parker, our communications guru, helping you craft your ideal message for the interview. So I want to go back to something you said that I think is great. You, when you're walking into the interview, what's the word in your head?
Mm-hmm.
Like how do you get them to come up with that word?
It goes back to the job description. Like I say, words have energy. I know that sounds a little woo-woo-woo, but actually now you can track it. You can actually take a picture with an MRI of the brain, and what you're doing is lighting up different areas of the brain. I know that sounds a little crazy, but it's true in neuroscience. And so what you want to do is light up the right part of the brain that will affect the behavior. So if I walk in and say I want to be motivational, I might be too big if I'm going in to be an underwriter for insurance. So you want to pick the word, and the words will pop out from the job description that they give you. You know, they're looking for a problem solver. Well, that's a lower energy than someone who is a motivator. Look for the words in the job description. They're going to help you, I think.
I think that's such an important thing, because if you're telling yourself, as so many people do before I walk into an interview, oh, I'm so nervous, or I'm scared of this, or and you're focusing on that, that's the word in your head.
That's
but if
your behavior.
You can say, yeah, I'm going to be, you know, I want to show them I'm a team player, or I want to show them I'm confident, or but some positive word, that sets the whole tone for the creating the message.
Our brains are pretty incredible. Our brains really are astounding, and they will rule the body. You just have to talk to it properly.
I love that. What's your word? That's the thing. All right, so you got your message. Now, what happens if the interviewer doesn't ask you the right questions?
Ah, this is wonderful, because here's the wonderful thing about a job interview. There's no such thing as the wrong question. If you look at the typical questions of interviewers, and I know, Kathleen, in your books you have a list of them, and I dug some up online, you know, the typical questions are, what are your career goals, what are your strong points, what are your weak points, how did you do in school, why do you want to work for us? If you really look at it, it comes down to about 5 to 6 ballparks. It comes to, you know, your education, your experience, your innovative ability, your problem-solving ability, how do you get along with others? So if you, and here's my little prep thing now that I do, and hundreds of people have said this works, it doesn't work for everybody. You take index cards, and at the top of the index card, you write the word strength, right? And now comes the secret. Every single question can lead, doesn't have to lead, but can lead to a story to back up what you are saying. You can't just say something. You have to have evidence that it's true. So you say, here are a couple of bullet points that prove my strength is problem solving. Number one, let me tell you about a time that my boss came here and asked me, or let me tell you about a time that any time you solved a problem, it's a story. Now, at the bottom of that index card, the bottom third, there has to be a message, and I'm kind of jumping here. You have your topper, which says, here's my wow, you know, something like I make rich people richer, or I keep whistleblowers out of jail, or whatever your message is. And then you need something very specific to others. I speak five languages. I have certain specific skills. I have a negotiation background. What's your? I also have. I'm a CPA, so I understand the language of the auditor. There are lots of little skills that take a look. They're really magic. So if you go in, my topper is I make rich people richer. They ask you any question about what do you like to do, what's your greatest success, what's your strength. That's the same question. You go to your strength card. You don't say my greatest strength is, you say my greatest opportunity is, what made me a star that day was. And you tell that story, and then you say, and that's because I speak five languages. That's because I have a negotiation background. So I've done things a little out of order. I don't know if I'm making sense here. I hope I am. You need to get the noun at the top of a card. Put the story that supports the noun, and then one or two key messages that you lead to, possibly lead to, from that question. Does that make sense that there are not that many questions in the world?
Right.
So if there I've answered,
is. So the noun at the top would be your strengths. So you're,
let's say,
you're listing.
Yes.
Okay. I was going to say, you list what your strength is, and then you can't just say, I'm a good communicator. Then you have to have a story that backs that up. So you have a couple of bullet points that have one or two stories that are going to back that up, and then you tie it with your message, and that's how I make rich people rich.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the flow. Now, the key is, if I say to you, Kathleen, tell me about a time that you were totally innovative. You can use your strength card.
Because now I'm starting with the story, get the noun, and still have my message.
Yeah,
it's perfect.
You just turn it into that. Or you have your, you say, what's my goal card? My goal is this. So if they say, where do you see yourself in 5 years, use your goal card. The work is to break down from the breakdown that they have, break down yourself, the nouns, pull the nouns. What are they looking for? They're looking for a problem solver, that's a card. They're looking for an innovator, that's a card. They hand it to you in the breakdown.
So we are that job ad that you are seeing on LinkedIn or wherever you're seeing the ad is a wealth of information to prep you for the interview.
Can be.
Because,
and if it's not, network. Call a gatekeeper. I'm coming in for an interview. Find out industry reports. If you can get brochure, something. The more you know about what they want, the more you can honestly and sincerely pick the pieces of yourself that meet those needs.
And I love the idea of the cards, because for those of us who don't necessarily have a great memory, you know, we have all these stories, and then you get into the car on the ride home, you're like, oh, I forgot to tell them this, or I forgot to tell them that. Whereas if you have the cards, you actually visually can kind of go into your mind's eye and see it.
Right.
The other trick I have to share, Gail, because you gave this to me a long time ago, and I just thought this was so amazingly helpful. When there are, you know, 3 to 5 things that I want to remember to tell somebody, I associate each one of those things with a room in my house.
Okay.
Because then I can kind of walk through, okay, when I'm in my kitchen, my strength, here's my story. That's that room. So almost while I'm sitting there talking to someone, I can in my head, okay, which room did I not go in? Oh, okay, I got to go into the kitchen now and give them that story.
Yeah.
And it's just another thing that makes you feel more prepared when you go in the room. So one of those little tricks so that you don't go, you're blank when you're in the moment.
And if any of the listeners say, gee, I always forget pieces and I hate it, number one, the index cards help because you're going to go through them. Like you said, Kathleen, they're not in front of you unless it's a phone interview, then they can be. But
right. In
an in-person interview, you can't have the cards, but you've worked them with your friend or significant other. You've worked them like you did when you were a little kid, Kansas wheat. I mean, it's flashcards. They're flashcards. Have somebody practice with you. So you have that. And then if you still say, gee, I have trouble remembering, then some mnemonic. I think the one you're suggesting as you walk around your house, you do the parts of your kitchen is a really strong one. You can go online. There are a million mnemonics. Get the one that appeals to you.
Yeah, that's perfect. But I do. I love this idea. And the one thing with the topper that I just want to make sure people heard, when, because Gail and I had talked about this before, the I make rich people rich. And what was your other one you had?
I help I had one guy, and I said it without even thinking, something about he did, I keep whistleblowers out of jail, or I make, you know, I get respect for whistleblowers, or, yeah, he was an attorney,
and
obviously.
And the reason I wanted to point those two things out to people is because that's not giving a job title. That's talking about what they do. And mm-hmm. even, it's so interesting, because even with, I mean, those of that have job titles, we kind of know what they do. You know, I'm a nurse, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer. We all think everybody knows what they are, but maybe not so much. And the job title is not descriptive enough, because lawyers come in all shapes and sizes, nurses come in all shapes and sizes, teachers come. So if you can give something descriptive about what you do and not just a job title, that alone will help set you apart from the crowd. Because, again, when you talk about what you do, it's an action. And action verbs have movement, and they there's just an energy about them that you don't get just from a title. So I think that's always key.
So I'm feeling I'm going to admit something here. I'm feeling a little messy because of the way I did things. So the message and the topper are not necessarily different. They're just the topper is said in a more casual, more informal way. That's
right.
In your introduction. That's in your tell me about yourself. You just want to say something like, and it depends on your style. You can say, I make rich people richer, or you can say, you know, people who know me say that I'm best at this, or if it's really a fun group that, you know, you're interviewing for like a youngfun.com or something, you can say, you know, I Googled myself this morning. This is what I learned. There are ways to do this that are appropriate. Then maximum of 2 minutes, maximum 2 minutes. Let the interviewer talk. Then they're going to ask you a question. One of your file cards is going to come to mind, and I want to quickly, you know, talk about a verbal buffer, but it will come to mind because I'm going to give you a stall technique. So you do your topper. You wait for the question. You do a stall technique. You answer, or you answer and tell a story, or you answer and tell a story and then your message. You mix it up. Got to mix it up. And then, you know that it is in the body language that you've got to maintain it. So it goes back to what, you know, we're going to call thinking time between the question and the answer.
Talk a little bit about that, because I think that's
sure.
a helpful thing.
They're called verbal buffers, and the most famous one is that's a good question. I would not suggest in a job interview ever telling the interviewer that they asked a good question. They know it was a good question. Or at least they think they know is a good question. So what you want to do is have a repertoire of expressions, like that's something that I considered when I saw your site. I've been networking about that. I know friends in the industry who have the same concerns. I am basically saying absolutely nothing. And the reason you have to practice them is so that while you're speaking and looking someone in the eye, which is the key, your brain, which works 10 times faster than the mouth, minimally, is saying, which index card was that? Where is that? Where am I? I got one. And then you can answer. Never having your eyes stray, never looking like you're stalling, never looking unsure because your mouth is moving. And I know you teach this technique too, Kathleen,
right.
So certainly add.
And it's a hard thing to do initially, and that's why you practice it when you don't need it, because you want to get into the habit of using sort of words to sound like you start to answer the question that just give you that extra beat to craft the answer in your mind that you want to craft. So rather than just sit like a deer in the headlights, like, ugh, and then come up with the answer, it just makes the flow of conversation that much better.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's a really helpful thing.
I feel like maybe reiterating the flow.
Okay.
You have a positive thought before you do all your prep. We know that. You walk in the door with your word. You shake hands with it's nice to see you again, V to V handshake, and the eye focus. You sit in a position that says, I'm alpha dog without looking tense, and you say hello and let them talk first. They'll probably say, tell me about yourself. and get ready for your topper, get ready for your informal explanation of what you do. You know, I had one guy say, I'm considered a really great negotiator, and you may not see negotiation skills on my resume, but I've got 3 kids. I'm the greatest negotiator in the world. They all go to sleep on time. Great topper. Great topper. And then they'll ask something. And you can lead the conversation to your message, to what's interesting about you, because no matter what they ask, you're saying, you know, that's an interesting, let me talk about my innovation this way. One experience that I had, you're leading them where you want them to go. And they don't know it because they don't care. They want to make sure that you're confident, that you feel proud about your accomplishments. If they only wanted the answers to questions, they'd hire from the resume. It's not what they're looking for. They're looking for how do you handle yourself, grace under fire.
That's perfect. And I think that's a great summary, too, of the process. And the one thing that you said, too, that I want to make sure doesn't get lost on them, there's sort of that ebb and flow, but you don't want it to be look like it, you're practicing a technique. They ask a question, you give a, you know, the first there's a buffer, then there's an answer, then there's a story, then there's a message, next question. So you got to mix it up a little bit.
Mix it up.
Sort of the general flow, but anything that once it looks like a technique, then it's a technique, and you're not being genuine. This structure is meant to be helpful to you in delivering that message more impactfully.
Absolutely.
Not to follow, you know, a rigid, this is how it must be done, but just to kind of give you the paradigm, as I like to say.
So, you know, summing this up, what you want to have is, any corporate, you want zero surprises. The more you prepare, the more you know your stuff, the more you know them, the more you know about yourself, you know about the match, the answers to the typical questions, the better you are. And then the surprise stuff happens. And the key to that is to stay positive, as you quoted from Sheryl Sandberg from the Lean In book. If you don't know how to do it, you want to do it and you want to learn. And so keep the mindset of positivity. And this can come in with the illegal questions, and I know, Kathleen, you are much more of an expert on this than I am. But if you are asked an illegal question and you have in your mind stay positive, remember it's all about building rapport, seeing you're easy to work with. If someone says, does your child enjoy sports? That's illegal because they're finding out children, they're finding out maybe if you're married or not, or if you're not married. So, right, Kathleen, am I right? That would be an illegal question.
You know, because I work with lawyers, I'm so hesitant to say something is illegal or illegal. I would say it's inappropriate.
Oh, okay.
Exactly,
I didn't know if there's illegalities even.
Well,
yeah.
With that one, because I think the argument could be made, I was just being curious, I was just chatting, you know, it was just a chatty question, whatever.
Right.
So,
right.
But anything, unless it's job specific, you know, that it's going to, your kid liking sport has nothing to do with your ability to do this job. So they really ought not be asking it. But rather than jump up and down and say this is inappropriate or illegal, and it may, I mean, in some states it may be illegal. I don't know exactly.
Yeah.
But what you could have that reaction, or you can reframe the question, say, you know, sort of smile and say, well, I'm curious what a child, and I wouldn't even say my child, because then you've tipped your hand too. I'm curious what a child's interest in sports has to do with, my ability to do these tax audits for you.
You can do it with a smile.
Oh, go ahead. Do you have a better way to do it?
This is definitely an and, because they're different styles.
Yeah.
I think that kind of a style is great because it ends that line of questioning. You've told them you know what they're doing.
Right.
Another way to approach it would be something like, you know, does your child like sports? And just think, you know, I think sports for children is incredible. They learn leadership. They learn resilience. And if all the parents in this world would just stay cool, they also might have some fun.
That's fabulous.
So if you stay positive and you say, oh, I want to play around with the idea of children in sports, you don't have to answer the exact question. Remember, you're not there to answer the questions. Your resume did that. You're there to show you have enthusiasm, you can think on your feet, that you have passion for the job, that you're a fit with the company. And so anything and you say, I don't like that, might be trouble. That's all. But the way you did it, Kathleen, works very well. It
well, you
often
know, it's,
says
and,
don't do that.
Yeah. But I was going to say, but I actually, you know, as I heard both of those answers, I actually think both of them sort of accomplished the very subtly being able to tell them, or mine was a little less subtle, we've ventured off into land that we don't belong. And
right.
So I think that, but your way does it in a way that doesn't make them defensive, because the way I would do it kind of calls them to task, like, that's, we're not going there. And whereas your way is more of a, we're off point here, but I'll go there. I'll go
right.
off point, but I'm not revealing any other information that you don't need to have,
yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's all about the positive language. It's interesting, though, too, and one of the things I always like to talk to people about in interviewing is, 9 times out of 10, when people do go into inappropriate areas, their intent is not malicious. They're not trying
right.
to trick anybody or screw anybody. Or they're just not. But it sometimes comes across that way. So if you come out at them too harsh, you know, it doesn't serve you well. On
okay.
the other hand, there are occasionally those interviewers who are just not the kind of people that you want to work with. And you sort of know that based on the questions they ask and how they treat you in the interview process. You owe no one anything at that. You don't want to do anything to damage your personal reputation, but if somebody's in there asking you offensive questions or sort of leading you down a path that you don't want to go, it is within your power to stop the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And you do it graciously. You simply say, I appreciate your time. It seems to me that this may not be the right fit for either of us. You know, I wish you good luck in finding the right candidate, and get up and get out.
Absolutely.
So, but I think a lot of times people feel like they have to sit there, and you don't. You've got that choice.
And I think the reason that your advice is so wise is because if that is an interviewer who has been told, be very tough, see how they are under stress, it's not a good interview technique, but I know interviewers who do that. If you came at them and said, this is not working, they might say, I'm so sorry. I've been told to do this. This is crazy. Let's get to know each other. Just, you know, being truthful and to your values, I think,
right.
without putting someone on the defensive, I think that's great advice, because you don't know why they're being difficult.
Right. It's so interesting, too. Sometimes candidates will often complain about the sort of off-the-charts kinds of questions that people ask about, you know, what book are you reading, or something that they can't quite figure out what it has to do with anything. It's not particularly an offensive question, but they're just, you know, what are they looking for here? And again, with those kinds of questions, I always say to folks, just play, go along, because they're looking for something. But you want it to be the right, you know, you don't want to just give them the answer they want. Those are the kind of questions, there are no wrong answers.
Yeah.
You know?
And I will tell you that if they have worked with someone like me or like you, they're not going to say, what are your strengths, what are your goals? Because those questions don't help. And certainly a bad interviewer says, I'm looking for someone who solves problems, as a team player, and is conscientious. And you say, oh, guess what? I just happen to be a team player. Yeah. So good interviewers ask for crazy questions. If you're doing sales, what's your first memory of money? And if you say, oh, I was terrified, I hated money, wrong. I worked with a girl once who was asked that question, and I said, well, what'd you say? And she said, well, I thought about what you said, and I thought about I was ready for it, and I said, oh, it was awful. I took all my good dolls and put them in my wagon when I was 5 years old and sold them door to door for a quarter. Sales! True
story.
Great.
Isn't that great? That's
great. So I teach people to ask those kinds of questions about books. Something more interesting, because they're looking for the truth, not something an interview book told you to say.
Right. That's exactly. Well, Gail, we are getting sort of to the end of our time here, and it is so clear to me that you need to come back, because
we've
just gotten to the tip of the iceberg in terms
of offering
interview skills.
I have one thing, even with my promise to be quiet. If they say, do you have any questions, have one. That's, you know, and we can talk about that another time, but just have one. And now I'm done. Thank you.
Yeah. And how can our listeners get in touch with you, Gail? Because I have to tell you, you know, I don't like to do commercials, but I'm going to do a few of them right now. But if get yourself on video, and there's nobody better than Gail. Because as a former actor, A, you'll just look good on camera because Gail knows how to do all the lighting stuff. But again, she can certainly help you craft this message so that you walk in there with your word, with your cards, and just ready to roll. So if you're feeling, you know, a little hesitant about this whole interview process, it is worth the time and money to get that kind of interview prep. It will serve you incredibly well. So I would encourage you to do that. And Gail, how can people find you?
Thanks. You can email me, gail@gpinteraction.com. Sorry that the whole company is not the URL. gail@gpinteraction.com. That will get to me, or I'll be glad to. If you write to me, then I'll be glad to give you my cell and we'll chat.
And just in case you miss any of that, you can also find Gail's contact information on my webpage on careerplanners.net, because she is someone that we are affiliated with and we work together, and so you can find her there as well.
Yep.
But Gail, thank you so much for sharing all your incredibly practical tips with our listeners. I think this stuff is helpful, and it's always so interesting to me because a lot of times I listen to different shows and, you know, other people, and it's, you get a lot of platitudes even in training. Oh, you know, be more organized or have a good message, but they don't really give you any ideas. Well, how do I do that exactly? And kind of getting into the detail, the devil's in the details of all these things, and really some concrete ideas that people can walk away with and, walk into an interview tomorrow morning being incredibly prepared. So certainly follow up with Gail and watch our show notes, because she will be back again and we'll continue the conversation on interviewing. The other sort of commercial I wanted to do is to remind people about my book, Get a Job, 10 Steps to Career Success. It is available on Amazon and inkwaterpress.com, but I'm also offering a little special this week for anyone who's listening. If you buy it on Amazon, it is $13.95 plus shipping. If you are interested, you can buy it directly from me for $10 plus shipping. I think shipping is like $3. So just send me an email with your address. I'll send you a PayPal invoice for $10 and put the book in the mail as soon as the payment is received. So just shoot me an email, kbrady@careerplanners.net. Also wanted to remind you, if you've missed any of our shows, Get a Job, you can listen to the archives of the past shows. They can be found now on iTunes, so you can listen to them as you go. Just search on iTunes for Life Coach Radio Network. You'll not only find past shows of Get a Job, but a lot of the other shows that are on Life Coach Radio Network that will help you in your career life planning. I mean, I'm so fortunate to be on this network with an amazing group of coaches that have a variety of different shows. As a matter of fact, I want to give a shout-out to the kind of upcoming shows, the next three or four shows coming up tomorrow at 10 o'clock. We have Gain Perspective with Coach Andrea Ruckelman, fabulous coach, just offering life perspective. On Friday at noon, we've got Coming Out with our 30-something coach. Sunday at 9 p.m., Mark My Words with business and life coach Mark Schell. And a special shout-out on Monday night at 8 o'clock, Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen. Reverend Jen is just, she's a fabulous life coach and just has wonderful, inspirational shows that you don't want to miss. So if there's anything else that we can do for you, please feel free to visit my website, careerplanners.net, or the Facebook page, KB Career Planners, and stay in touch with us. Let us know what topics you'd like to hear next. Anything that we can do to help you get a job, that's what we're here for. So good night, and thank you for listening. Have a great evening.
Good night.
Good night.